And thank you all for participating in your recovery tonight and joining in. As you know, that this is the last Monday of the month, and we usually have a speaker. And I couldn't be more chuffed or excited that the speaker is here tonight, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Just the thing is, the one good thing about the pandemic is it allows us to hear people from different parts of the world, and this man is no exception to the rule. I loved hearing his voice, and I love hearing his message. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Douglas L., for your experience, strength, and hope. Thank you once again.
Hi, brother. Thanks. I'm an addict. Name's Douglas.
Hi,
If somebody
Douglas.
could give me a thumbs up.
Welcome home.
All right, man. So I'm gonna take it that y'all can hear me okay. Look, I'm pulled over on the side of a road. I was at a rest stop, and then I had to move, and so I'm traveling. But if at any time it gets a little bit noisy or something like that, just somebody reach out, and I'll adjust. But anyway, let's jump into it, man. Steve, Michael, and Lisa, thanks for your service about, getting this thing up and going and staying in contact with me. And when I'm asked to do something in A, man, it's I was taught to say yes first and then figure out how we can make it happen. And that ties into, man, there's nothing that I've done in the name of staying clean, that I can sit now and look back and say, damn, I wish I didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like going to a meeting, helping somebody, listening to somebody speak, whatever it is, man, going out for the coffee, doing whatever. Man, I'm sitting here and thinking that's exactly what I needed to do to get a day of freedom. And so allow me to thank everybody who tuned in just now, and like we said about participating in your recovery. Man, that's how I stay free. Man, I try to do what I can do to become healthy, with the focus being that, hey, I'm doing this, man. I'm doing this step work. I'm doing this or whatever, so I can carry it to somebody else, man. Just like the folk carried it to me when I was desperate and drowning. They said, look, man, you don't know how to swim and you're fucking drowning. We know how to swim. We're not drowning. If you want this freedom that we have, do what we're doing. And so look, man, let's jump into this look real quick. And I think I got about, 25 or 30. I'm not going to take up the 30 because, Carl and Henry, you'll appreciate this. They were just rocking and rolling with me, a couple of days ago. Everyone gets pissed off at the guy who talks a little bit too long, who goes over the time limit, but nobody's pissed off at the guy who comes in a couple minutes under, right? So I'm gonna try to keep it fresh like that, try to keep it under that. And what's really neat too is, like, I can't see who's on, which kind of takes me out of myself a little bit. I'm calling in on the phone, so I don't know who's on, which is good, man. That's the way it probably should be. But look, page 14, it says this. I just want to address this real quick. If you're in a sixth edition, rock and roll with me here. Look, there's no such thing as a social addict. Okay, cool, right? Because right there, if I grab on to this, right, if I say, hey, look, the HP is speaking to me through this, this takes away the, hey, could I smoke a joint maybe like on a Tuesday night and just kind of relax? Can I do that? You know what I'm saying? Or some folk talking about, hey, could I have a glass of wine, with a steak dinner on the weekends or something like this? Look, there's no such thing as a social addict, man. It don't stop there for me. It just doesn't. And then if we turn to page 15, it talks about this. Look, we were complete failures. Look, I identify with that. Personality change is what we really needed. Change from self-destructive patterns of life became necessary. And in my margins, in my basic text, I had that's a spiritual awakening. You know what I'm saying? Like, my personality change, my perspective shift, those are all awakenings of my spirit. And I do want to tell you this, man. Like, I may talk about a higher power a lot, in my share or whatever in that school. If that's one of those things to where you're like, man, fuck this dude, I don't want to hear about this, extend me some grace. You know what I'm saying? Just listen long enough to maybe you can identify with, hey, look, whatever this power that's greater than me comes out to be, I'm on a journey and I'm still getting to know that, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you may be at a place in your journey where you're like, well, fuck that. Well, that's okay. Well, fuck it then. Stick and stay, man. Don't leave. You have a story to tell too. But check this out. So why are we here? Why are we tuned in? Middle of page 15, it says this: recovery is what happened in our meeting. Recovery is what happens in our meeting. Yeah, recovery is what happens in our meeting. The next sentence, five words, man. The most important, maybe the most important line in the basic text. It reads this: our lives are at stake. And in my margin, I put never forget it, man. All right. So anyway, so let's jump into it. So, my mom's an addict. My old man, he can be a tyrant at times and stuff like this. And growing up, I hated everything about my life, man. The whole deal. I wasn't this enough, and I was too much of that, And so, if we try to identify with each other, I would just invite you to say, "Hey, man, go back and to see when we were young folk. What were you too much of, and what weren't you enough of?" Fill in the blank, man. But the feelings of "Hey, I'm not good enough, and I ain't shit, and my self-worth is about as low as you can get." That's me. Man, what happened is like when I started using, man, it didn't matter to me, if I was too fat or too short, or I had those Coke bottle glasses. We used to talk about those, man. We was on welfare, and I couldn't get the thin cut glasses, man. I got the glasses that, they fucking look like dinner plates, and man, and I was always, man, always less than. And this and that. Didn't care once I started using. Just didn't care, man. It didn't matter. One thing about that, look, check this out. My family uses, aunts, uncles, my mom and this and that. And my sister is a year and a half younger than me. We got high. We learned how to get high with the same folk. And same drug of choice, hers with weed and pain pills, same with me. Man, look, our addictions took off, and they kind of paralleled one another. She was a year and a half younger than me, so she was kind of, reached that desperation point maybe a year or two after I did. But I want to circle back. I want to tie into my sister, man, and I want to tie this in as I talk here about, well, what happens, and what's our perspective about getting clean. But anyhow, my addiction took off, man. I learned how to, I learned how the pain pill game, and that's what my life was about. $6 or $7, I could get high, and so my life was really consumed with, how can I get $6 or $7? How can I get $6 or $7? How can I get $6 or $7? And bro, this weekend I was hanging out with my tribe, and it was just beautiful, man. We were camping. We were talking a little bit about football here and there, or something like this, or somebody was. But anyhow, I was thinking, if anyone is like an American football fan, and stuff. Years ago, there was this quarterback. They called him Slash. His name was Cordell Stewart. He was Pittsburgh. He would play quarterback, and sometimes they put him in a slot as a receiver and things like this. And bro, and I still using then. And what I wanted more than anything was a Cordell Stewart jersey. Y'all with me on that, man? So if you want to relate this to your story, just whatever shiny thing that you wanted, to be a parachute, didn't matter, whatever it was. And I wanted this, man, and I got my hands on one. Must have been a gift or something like that. I think it was like a gift, maybe a Christmas gift or something. But anyhow, and it was a real jersey too. It wasn't one of these, how sometimes we'll rock one of these shirts that look like a jersey, but they ain't shit. This was a real jersey, man. I had it, but I remember my cousin came through, and I needed to get high, and he traded getting high a couple of times, and he said, "Yo, let me run that jersey," and bro, I literally, man, the jersey came off of my back, whoop, and gave it to him without even thinking about it, and that's just like a little snapshot of it. Didn't matter what I desire, whatever I had. Like whatever was mine and in my possession, if you could get me high, it was yours. It make no difference, man. And at the end of my addiction, and that I let me tighten this up. I just hit you with the end of my road looked like, and that way we can get busy and jump into recovery, and then I'm gonna kick it back to Michael. But I was one of those addicts, man. I was always trying to put just a little bit of money together to get high one at a time. And I never had a big lump sum of money, didn't have an inheritance or anything like that. Like I was the bottom feeder. I was always, yo, let me get 50 cent, let me get a dollar, stealing $5 at a time. You know what I'm talking about? I was the low one. I'm not the addict who you had people looking up to him out there and stuff like that. You know what I'm, that's not my story, man. I wanted to be though, you know, but that's not me. And bro, I'd put together 50 cents sometimes so I could buy an antidepressant and snort it. And I'm gonna tie this in, you know, right quick. And so what happens if you do that? I don't know if it, you know, if any of you folk had that story, but if you put together 50 cents, then you can buy an antidepressant because you can't get high with anything else. Like I couldn't get my hands on anything. Remember blasting this up my nose and the right side of my face, like blew up, like it swelled up so bad. I swelled shut, my nose, fucking air looked like I had an allergic reaction just on one side of my face. And walking around, you know, I think I was in high school or something, you know, and whatever, my first 10th grade year or something. But it didn't get high though, man. You know, it did get me high. And I was like, man, fuck, you know. And then a couple of days later, I was in the same predicament, man. Like I needed to use, and I couldn't get my hands on anything. And the same dude, you know, I come across and I had 50 cent. Like, yeah, let me get another one with full hope, full trust, full, you know, God, please let me get high with this. I just did it 2 days ago and didn't get high, but let me, you know, let's run with it now. And I did the same thing, and guess what? The fucking same thing happened. My face blew up. I didn't get high. But man, that's like a little snapshot of what my insane thinking is. Like if I had a little bit of hope to get high, I was willing to do whatever, man. And you guys know that, man. Obsessed, man. Compulsion, total self-centeredness. Like the disease had me. But anyway, at the end of my addiction, man, I was in this trailer park. I ran out of drugs. I ran out of money, and which means I ran out of friends, right? And the homie I was with, man, I thought I was just gonna stay there that night. I was kicked out of my parents' house, and I was kicked out of school. You know, I didn't make it out of 10th grade using, and you know, I thought I could stay there. And he's like, "But get the fuck up out of here, man!" It was like 2 in the morning or something, and I just kept walking, man. I just kept walking. You know, and I didn't have anywhere to go, but I kept walking. And there's this overpass in southwestern Pennsylvania, 51 and 119. You know, this overpass, and I was either going to walk over the side or walk out in front of a vehicle, and I didn't want to live anymore. And bro, and you know, when you go, if you know, like an attempted suicide is part of your story, man, I invite you to identify with me on this part. You know, when that adrenaline spikes your body when you go to do it, and then you get that total calmness, that total numbness. That's what it was like for me that night. And as I went to do it, this thought just penetrated my mind into like my spirit. If I keep walking, like don't kill myself just now. If I keep walking, I can get high up one more time. I can run into somebody who can get me high up tonight. And that was enough for me to keep walking. And I stayed at a laundromat. You know, we had this laundromat that was open 24/7, and I stayed there for a night or two. And bro, that was like winding down to the end of my addiction, man. Like there wasn't a big police chase. You know what I'm talking about? There wasn't like this big, you know, thing or anything, man. It was literally, you know, I'm waking up. You know, each day was kind of like building upon the next. I didn't want to live. Obsessed to get high. When I could get high, it was like a break from life. And then the rest of the time, like, how can I get another one? And I went up to this institution, but here, man, let me talk about now, like, the transition into recovery piece is some dude that was copping dope off of my mom and my uncles and whatever had gotten clean in Narcotics Anonymous. He had like a year and a half clean, right? And so as I'm in an institution, my mom, who strung out to this day, man, you know, can't stop using. She reaches out to him, and she ran into him and was like, "Where you been?" He's like, "Look, I'm clean. I go to meetings now, blah, blah, blah." So when I'm in an institution, she reaches out to him. And I share this story because, look, man, if the HP puts us in positions to allow people to know, "Hey, I'm clean," fucking do it, man. It saved my life. You know what I'm saying? So she reaches out to him. She says, "Hey, my son's gonna die if he don't get help. You know, he'll be home this and this day." Now, I didn't stay clean in the institution when I got home. That's not my story. But here's what happened. March 12, 2000, It was a Sunday, 11 o'clock in the morning. But my mom reached out to him. He came to where I was staying at, and the dude was clean, man. There is no mistake that he was clean. He looked clean. He spoke clean. You know what I'm talking about, folks? Think about the guy or the lady who 12-stepped you. You know that feeling of like, hey, there's no way that this person is not clean. Man, he had that, man. My spirit wanted that. And he took the last little bit of stuff I had and flushed it down the toilet. And he looked at me and said, now you can start living. Bro, that was 21 years ago, man. I ain't been high since, a day at a time. Like, he showed me how to do this thing. He started taking me to meetings and told me, shut the fuck up and listen. And he made it really clear, man. Like, I know how to get high. I didn't know how to stay clean and be free, but he did. Get to the meetings early, man. You set the meetings up. It was back in the day when we were still emptying ashtrays and shit, and that's what I was doing, mopping the floors, emptying ashtrays after the meeting. All us newcomers would have to share in the first couple minutes of the meeting. We didn't have shit to say, but we would say something, and then they would back clean up, and they would whoop our ass, the rest of the meeting and talk about everything we're doing wrong. And I loved it, man. They were teaching me to live free a day at a time. And folks, if we're clean now, we have this lived experience of working steps. Like, it's, and I say this very lovingly, like, it's our responsibility to carry a clear message of hope to the newcomer. A clear message of hope was carried to me, period, point blank. It was. No matter what happens in my life, man, I don't have to get high, and here's how not to. Am I at regular attendance at meetings? Am I calling my sponsor? Am I praying in the morning and at night? Don't give two fucks. They didn't ask me, do you like to pray? Do you want to pray? How do you feel about getting on your knees and asking for help? And how do you feel about getting on your knees? Fuck all that. They weren't concerned with my feelings. They were concerned about me staying clean a day at a time and living. You stay away from people, places, and things, man. We're your people now. Bro, up until then, man, any like little hangout or any little thing that would have me as a member, I want to be a part of it. You know what I'm talking about? And well, man, like, they accepted me and they loved me in, and I wouldn't have it any other way, man. So look, so getting clean and got married, which was really cool. Most beautiful girl I had ever seen in my whole world. She had a year or two too. You know how we do it. At least we waited. That's what I tell people. I was like, you know what, man? It's kind of cool. We both had a year or two before we did the deal. But we tried to do it right, man. We got married and we had a son, and he's 14 now, and then another son, and he just turned 12 2 days ago, Saturday, and she started using, man. She relapsed. We both had like 9 or 10 years, I guess, at the time, or something like this, whatever. But she started using, and we tried to make it work for like about 9 months, and it was the most insane, toughest part of time of my life. It just was, man. And I share this, maybe if somebody can identify and relate. I'm going to check my time. All right, I'm going to wind down here soon, but I invite you to try to relate this to me, man. If you have that experience, like, you're clean living with somebody who ain't, fucking painful, bro. My anchor every week was Thursday night. I would go to my home group. I would make sure she had whatever she needed, and she promised never to take the kids out of the house while I was going at the meeting. I would hit the meeting and then haul my ass right back home. And my life was centered around like taking care of, her and making sure that she don't die. And it was sick, bro. It was fucking sick. Anyway, man, what happened? I came home from the meeting, and she wasn't there, the kids weren't there, and I went into this full blown panic, and then I was looking all around and I seen her at the edge of the driveway face down. I guess it was about 8:30 p.m., 9 o'clock, something like this. It wasn't terribly late, and there was blood on the boys. They were strapped in the this stroller, you can put two little kids in a stroller and stuff. And blood on their face and stuff. And bro, I yanked them up out of that fucking thing as fast as I could. I got them in the bathtub to see where, how they're hurt, where they're bleeding at. And thank God it wasn't their blood, it was hers. And she don't recall what had happened, but, and that's her story to tell, and all that stuff. But that, made a decision. I was like, look, man, I'm going to die. The kids are going to die in this insanity. I can't do it. And, so here's what happened, man. Look, this is how good the HP is. She got, took her to this detox center and gave her the whole, gave the intake nurse the whole story. And by the time we finished telling the story, my wife at the time was like, fuck this, let's leave. But she had said enough of her story that they admitted her, and she had to stay there, and thank God for that. And so I walked in the house, man, after that, with two boys, I think one in pull-ups and one in diapers, you know what I mean? And I walked in and I was like, now what do we do? And you folks, man, Narcotics Anonymous, in every way, shape, and form, showed me how to be a dad to those boys, how to make meals, cook, clean, do all that thing. And I want to hit on this, and then I'm going to jump into like one last little thing, and then I'm going to kick it back to you, Michael. Bro, I couldn't, my son, my 12-year-old son, like at the end, he was still, just a little baby. He'd be crying for mama, in the mornings, at nights, and before and after naps. And I just couldn't bring, I didn't have anything inside of me to give. I couldn't comfort him, man. I couldn't, like, I was cooking their meals and doing what I could, you know what I mean? But like, it was just me and them, and I couldn't comfort him. I didn't hold him, didn't do anything. And he'd be fucking crying all the time, man. And I say this so somebody can relate, man. If you're there, if you went through this, this is what NA did for me. I ended up on the phone with someone who said, look, for 15 minutes today, 15 minutes, just hold him. And then the next day it was 20. Then the next day, a couple of days after, it went up to like 25 or a half hour. And do you know, after a while, that boy wouldn't leave my side. I'm talking about laying on my chest when I'm in the recliner, jumping on my back when I'm building them little jungle gyms and shit. I'm talking, NA showed me how to comfort, and they showed me how to be empathetic. And I wasn't new to the program, man. Like, I was clean 10, something like that. And NA keeps teaching me how to be a service. NA keeps teaching me how to show up for other people. Look, man, we she's clean now. Like, the boy's mom, we got divorced, and she's clean like 6 or 7 years now. We have this really cool co-parenting relationship, which is really awesome. And that's part of like the most painful season of my life. Do you know this, man? The most painful season of my life, her using and doing all that, has become like a place that connects me with so many people, man. Like Douglas, how, share what it's like, man, staying clean through that. And it just connects me with a lot of folk. And so that's part of my story that I'm able to share. And so, look, man, I was clean about 15 years, in October. It'll be 6 years that addiction murdered my sister. And so she was 29. She never made it to see 30. And I say this with the backdrop of this. Look, man, the last 10 years of her life, I wouldn't wish on anybody. In the last 10 days of her life, I got to see that when she was hooked up to every kind of machine you could think of in a hospital. Do you know her last 10 years and my last 10 years, during that time? Bro, me and my sons, man, we're in Costa Rica living in Panama. We lived a couple years in China. We're literally experiencing what this life has to offer. I'm making connections with people, man, that are soul touching. And she's trying to get one more, and trying to get one more, and trying to get one more. And I spoke at her funeral, man, and I talked about that. Like, with the backdrop of saying, look, I'm desperate to get high and I'll do anything, but there's freedom to be had. If I can shut the fuck up and listen to what you have to say and do it, there's freedom to be had. So when we talk about this, man, when I read that part out of the basic test where it says, look, our lives are at stake, they're fucking at stake, period. Like, I earned my seat in Narcotics Anonymous, and if you're listening, you've earned your seat in NA. Get a clean date and protect it with your life. That's what I do, man. March 12th, 2000, I protect that date with my life because my life is what rests on it, period. And so now, we fast forward it now, man. Like, I'm the dude that didn't make it out of, I didn't make it out of 10th grade using, man. I got clean. I got an education, and I'm in the field of education as a profession now. Really been fortunate, man. Been able to travel and been in meetings like face-to-face meetings, like all over the world, and it's really cool. It's just really cool, man, to meet my people. And something really beautiful has happened. with the pandemic and stuff, I link up with a tribe of people down in New Orleans, and or New Orleans is what they would have me say, New Orleans. And bro, I feel like I know these folk my whole life. Man, it's been a year or two or something like this, and we were just kicking it, this weekend. And man, it's something. Look, and I invite you, and if you're listening, look, I invite you to grab onto this piece. Some things I regret or wish I could go back and kind of relive again is not knowing who I'm in the presence of. When I got clean, man, there were some old timers. They're passed on now, but like they were some fucking heavy hitters, and I mean that in the most spiritual sense. Like they knew how to carry the message, man, and love people, and just have that. And I didn't appreciate it as much as I wish I would have. And there's been seasons in my life, man, where I've had people come in, for a season or for a reason, whatever it is, and whether I take it for granted or I don't nurture it, how we do, man. We're hot and cold, hot and cold, and that's cool and all that. I'm mindful now, man. This season of my life, I'm mindful of who God's putting in my life. And I don't care if it's for one season or for the rest of my life, however long that season, I'm trying to look for the reason and trying to embrace it and do all that stuff. But I would invite you, come along this journey with me. The people in your life, nurture it, man. Be aware of who you're in the presence of. I'm trying to be aware of who I'm in the presence of. Like this is the HP working through addicts, just like me, man, to touch, like we're touching each other's soul. So when I read this, look, man, my life's at stake. It's at stake. Our lives are at stake. Now, what am I willing to do to stay clean a day at a time, man? I need to answer that with anything, whatever it takes. Tell me what to do to get this freedom. I'm willing to do it. And, and so look, let me end with this, man. Let me end with this on page 80. Obsessive behavior is a common denominator for addictive people. I don't know if you've ever been had obsessive behavior. I do, right? I do. So check this out. So we say we have times when we try to fill ourselves up until we're satisfied, only to discover that there's no way to satisfy. Yeah, that's me, man. Food, sex, it goes on to talk about food, sex, and money. Like I run at those three things to try to satisfy me, to fill me up inside, man. And it's like the dog that chases the car, and chasing the car and chasing the car. He ever catches the car, you don't know what the fuck to do with it. And that's what I do with the shiny ball in my life, man. Whatever the new shiny thing is, I want to run 1,000 miles an hour at it. If I catch, I don't know what the fuck to do with it anyway. But here's the awakening of my spirit that I've had, through step work and listening to you folks, is that if I can work on my connection with the HP, if I could get right and get centered and know that I'm called to be out of myself and in the other people, if I come from that position, if that's my start, then I can enjoy food and I can enjoy money, I can enjoy sex. But if I'm trying to do it the other way, food, sex, and money to fill me up so I can feel this connectedness, it just never works, man. And I always need more. I always need more. So I'm going to end with that, man. It's like, look, if I can stay clean a day at a time and focus on that magic six-letter word, others, then I can experience this freedom. I love you, folk. Michael, I'm going to pass it back to you.